Session number 9083, rule number 1.
This is Sunday, January the 19th, 1975, and I'm calling on Mr. Wilson, late of the Grenadier Guards, who served in the 1914-18 war and was present on that famous Christmas Day, 1914, when there was an unofficial truce between our army and the German army, and they had a lot of fraternizing, and he's going to tell me all about it. Morning, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning to you.
I thank you very much for receiving me. And I hear that you served in the Grenadier Guards.
Yes.
And what's interests me very much is I think that episode of the First World War, where that you had that wonderful thing on Christmas Day.
Yes, yes.
Is the most wonderful thing of the war, and I've never had the privilege of meeting anybody who was actually there. I wonder if you'd be good enough to tell me what you remember about that.
Well, it was early on New Year's Eve morning when we heard a German singing.
Yes.
Holy Night, yes. Of course, in German, naturally. And then after he'd finished singing, there was all sorts of Christmas greetings being shouted across No Man's Land to us. Well, the Germans was only about 250, 300 yards away, in the same kind of ditches as ourselves, mud and water and everything else, lice, rats.
Yeah.
And these Germans, they shouted out, "Well, what about you singing Holy Night?" Well, we had a go, but of course we wasn't very good at that. Anyway, they said, "Meet us and come over in No Man's Land." Well, half the time we was allowed a limited number of us. Our officers allowed a limited number of us to go into No Man's Land, and there we were chatting away, and we finished up by singing carols and talking in all sorts of things about the war and other things. Well, I met a very perfect perfect English-speaking German soldier who told me he'd lived all his life, or practically all his previous life, in England. He looked upon England as his home, where he had many friends, and but he made a mistake. He visited his dying father in Germany just before the war started, 1914, and he wasn't allowed to return to England. The war was about to begin, and so he was sent into the German army, and he said, "How I would have loved to have been interned in Alexandra Palace."
Yeah.
He said, for the war,
yeah.
He said, it'd been much better than this. Anyway, that was that. And, well, this sort of thing went on between us and the Germans. And on our right was other units of the 20th Guards Brigade and other brigades, all part of the 7th Division, actually. And there was the Scots Guards on our right. They were members of the 20th Guards Brigade. And further to their right was a unit of the Gordon Highlanders, who were also members of our brigade. And, well, the Scots Guards, they didn't go in for carol singing. I suppose Scots, they didn't know the German versions of it, you see.
No.
And so they made a huge bonfire in No Man's Land and made a bloody stew, which they all sat round and enjoyed. The Northern Highlanders, apparently. I didn't know, but found out later that they was playing football with the Germans. And there's a record in the Imperial War Museum, I understand, of an extract from a German soldier's diary, where he records that he found out that Celtic soldiers didn't wear any underpants under their kilts. Yeah. Well, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I have spoken to various Scotsmen, and they all record the same fact. Well, now, we, as the Grenadiers, we were relieved on, I think it was Boxing Day, we was relieved, and went to the rear, or 200-300 yards behind the line, I suppose, or so-called line, and there we had our so-called Christmas dinner, accompanied by the Prince of Wales, who was then serving with my regiment, and we went back to the line again, and of course this truce was then spreading. The by then the headquarters, general headquarters behind the line, had found out that there was a truce on, and that didn't go down very well, so they issued an order that the fraternization was to cease forthwith, and any German soldiers who were seen to leave their trenches for the purpose of fraternizing was to be fired on. Well, we didn't do any firing, but somebody did. As soon as the Germans come out on their parapets, blast a machine gun fire, put an end to it, you see. Well, that was that. And of course, it didn't ever occur again, not as far as I know, although somebody said there was an attempt in 1915, but I didn't know anything about that. I joined the Grenadiers in 1911. That's a long time ago.
You're a regular soldier.
Oh, yes, I was a regular soldier, but I joined the Grenadiers in the recruiting office in Saffron Wold in Essex.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I'd let myself in for. The
Flat in discipline.
The glamorous posters of guardsmen in uniform and sitting on lovely horses.
And big pay.
shilling a day. Yeah. Well, we, as guardsmen, we got one and a penny. We got a penny more, a day more than the regular soldiers. We was considered to be worth a bit more, I suppose.
Yeah. And your deductions, of course, they deducted some out for barrack
damages. Oh, yeah, barrack damages. Yeah. Upkeep of soldiers' graves.
Yeah.
And we had to buy all the cleaning kit to keep ourselves clean and the barrack room. Mm. And, well, I went to Caitlin Depot.
Yeah.
Caitlin, the depot was the guards at Caitlin then. And, my goodness, I was there for 12 weeks or 16 weeks. And I was fit for anything when I come out. First of all, I was greeted by a corporal who said, "Now I'm going to be your instructor for 16 weeks. This is where we will make a man of you or break your heart in the attempt."
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, he, I think he made a man of me, but he also broke my heart.
Uh-huh.
he was responsible for every branch of the training except gymnasium. Well, the gymnasium instructor was one of these chaps you see on television at all the dues, doing the most marvellous things, and well, we didn't quite accomplish all that sort of thing, but we did come out. We was able to walk the beam and climb the ropes and that sort of thing, you see. But anyway, I joined the battalion, the 1st Battalion, at Chelsea, and I was appointed to the King's Company. And the orderly sergeant, when he received me, he said, "How tall are you, Wilson?" I said, 6'2", Sergeant. "Oh," he said, "I didn't know the King's Company was short of men. Come along," he said, "you'll make the number up." And he put me into a room at Chelsea where there was a room full of men, not one of them under 6'5". And I felt about as big as a worm.
Yeah.
And I was always the left-hand man of the company, yeah. Shortest man on day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, well, then, while I was there, I did all sorts of things, King's Guard, funerals, weddings, and various other things, receptions, levees, garden parties, and all that sort of thing. And that was where the Prince of Wales joined us as a young officer. And I soon formed the opinion, by the way, I was an officer servant, and I come in very close contact with the Prince of Wales, together with other officers, and it was there and then that I formed the opinion that he would never be the King of England. That opinion of mine is still a secret.
Yeah,
I'm not prepared to discuss that.
No.
And that was my opinion, and of course, things turned out he never was. He was king, but he was never crowned. And some of my friends said, "Ah, you made a mistake." I said, "Ah, but he's not crowned yet." So, anyway, we all know the result of that. And by the way, you want me to say some more?
Yes, I'm very happy. Please carry on. Yes, you're all very interesting.
Yes, and well, we went to France, of course, in 1914 with the original expeditionary force. I was a member of the 7th Division, and our job was to go to Antwerp and check the Germans. Von Kluck's army, who was out to capture the Channel ports. Well, we didn't get to Antwerp. The Germans was there first. But I did see Mr. Winston Churchill in the square of, I think it was Bruges, dressed in an officer's, British Army officer's uniform. I don't know what rank he had, but he was wearing a French soldier's helmet, and he then had that bulldog expression on his face under whatever hat he wore. He was acting as a policeman, really. He was trying to sort out the refugees, not so that it impede our. It was all going the same way then, of course.
Yeah.
We was hurrying away, and well, there was one or two Royal Marines got mixed up with us because Churchill had gone out there earlier with a bunch of Royal Marines to stop the whole German army, but of course it was hopeless. Some of them was captured, some escaped over the border into Holland, and many were killed, of course. Well, we retired as far as the outskirts of Ypres, which was the focal point of all the roads leading to the Channel ports. And there we was told that we had got to stay and fight and die if necessary. Well, of course, most of us did. We come out of the line in November with 129 men and one officer out of 30 officers and 1,100 men when we left England, and the officer who brought us out was none other than today, he's still alive as far as I know. I had a letter from him the other day, Lord Claude Hamilton. He was then only a second lieutenant, but he's the same age as myself, splendid officer. And well, we then of course had So a draft come out of England of new reservists and territorials, and made up the brigade again, and back up into the line where we stayed until early 1915. From then we went on and fought the Battle of Neuve Chapelle, another losing battle as far as we was concerned. You see, it was in those early days, it was a case of British soldiers armed with the Lee Enfield magazine rifle and against high explosive shells from the German side. Their artillery was absolutely overpowering. I mean, most of our casualties was caused by artillery fire, men blown to pieces and never found. And they attacked in mass formation, the Germans did, and they tried to overcome us by the numbers. But, of course, the British soldiers those days was an expert at musketry, at shooting, rifle fire.
Yeah, and the Germans and thought it was machine gun firing, didn't they?
And it was said that the Germans said the British soldier must be armed with some kind of machine gun.
Yeah, I've read about that. Yeah.
Well, of course, we was the only army who practiced rapid fire, that was one of the things which we excelled at. I couldn't blow my own trumpet. I was a marksman all through my service, and I was fortunate enough to score 15 balls in a minute at 500 yards.
Pretty good.
That's to the surprise of my instructor. But that was the only time I scored such a wonderful thing. It was more by luck than judgment, I think. Anyway, that was that.
You've got a terrific memory, haven't you?
I got a good memory.
Yeah, terrific.
Well, that's what lots of people say.
Yeah.
But I can remember what happened in my youth better than I can remember what happened last week.
Yeah.
For instance, when I'm in the kitchen cooking my meals, I have to go to the cupboard next door, and when I get there, I forget what I go for.
Yeah, well, I mean, you needn't be ashamed of that, because you were talking about certain things of the First World War, and I wasn't even born at that time. You were talking about 1915, well, I wasn't even born until 1917, but I am just the same. I go upstairs and think, now, what have I come up here for, you know?
You was a soldier in the Second World War.
Yes, yes.
And you said in your letter you was captured.
Yes, I was only what I consider severe attached. I was the territorial of the 4th Battalion, the Royal Sussex Regiment.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I got captured at Alamein, Battle of Alamein.
Oh, you were with the 8th Army.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, yes.
And then, of course, eventually got to Italy. The Germans handed us over to the Italians. I was taken to Italy. And when Italy capitulated, they grabbed me again and took me to Germany for another couple of years.
I have a friend at Bosham who was also captured at Alamein.
Yeah.
But he's a German.
Yeah.
But he's a friend of mine.
Oh,
he's a splendid sort of a chap.
Yeah.
He's married a German girl, an English girl. He's got a family. And he's a splendid type of man. And he was one of Rommel's dispatch riders.
He got
captured.
Talk about the Germans. The Rommel's Africa Corps were the elite of the German army.
Oh, yes, yes.
And we were captured. I must say, at the first onset, I was treated in a correct soldier-like manner.
Yes.
But, of course, after we were handed over to the Italians, that was a different kettle of fish. That wasn't so good.
Yes, the Italians are a different type of person I found the Germans right up to the very, very last. They fought magnificently up to the very, very last.
And I don't care what you say, they respected us above all other people, didn't they? They respected us more than they did.
Oh, good gracious, yes. And I went into the Army of Occupation in 1918. We was quartered at Cologne, and magnificent city and a lovely cathedral where we paid many visits to. And in the cathedral then, probably is still today, was a glass case containing a collection of human bones.
Yeah.
And the verger of the cathedral told me they were the bones of the three wise men.
Yeah.
I said, how do you know? He said, well, it's recorded in history. But I said, how is it that in the Cologne Cathedral?
Yeah.
He said, because they were Germans.
Well, Hitler said Shakespeare was a German, didn't he?
I said, is that why they were called wise also? But that's by the way, of course.
Yes,
That's one of the things which...
Did you manage to get through without being wounded?
I was wounded in the very last battle of the Somme.
Oh, yeah, over there.
Only slight. Yeah. I had a slight head wound, but I got as far as the field dressing station and patched up and
back
up to the line again.
You thought you had a bloody one. Well, in case I forget, I was going to ask you something. There's a piece of paper that was given to my father, and I wondered, Beck, you can tell me what that accent was there. St. Ledger, were you ever in that battle at all?
August 1918. St. Ledger. I remember it very well indeed.
You were in that accident, were you?
I was there, and that is where, and that, on that very date, I was awarded a military medal.
Were you? Oh, may I shake hands with you? I congratulate you. I didn't realise you were MS.
Yes. I was awarded for an immediate award on the field with a military medal for a certain action on the 23rd of August 1918.
That very day?
At St. Ledger.
Yeah, well, I'm glad.
Yes.
Apparently...
The reason I was awarded the military medal was... would make up a very sad story, so I'm not going to discuss that.
I understand.
But that is a...
A
very very fine souvenir.
Yeah.
This is to certify that 18...
18874 is number
74. Private. Oh, Lance Corporal, yes. Oh, well, I suppose he was acting unpaid.
That's it, that's right. Yes.
That's the one I've got here. But
Fancy being the very same date. Very same date, is it?
There's a Lance Corporal. Lance Corporal Ayling there has got 11009 Ayling. Of course this Ayling here was the one that was killed.
Yes.
But this one wasn't killed.
No, my father
wasn't. Oh, no.
He wasn't killed.
Oh, that's the
Yes. Was this a defensive, this action? What was that?
That's where we was advancing in 1918, but St. Ledger...
Yeah, it looks like Moyenville. Moyenville and St. Ledger.
Yes, Boyenville. Yeah, Moyenville and St. Ledger.
Yeah.
Well, that was where the Germans put up a very strong defence, and we suffered... the Guards Division suffered... a lot of casualties there.
You're lucky to be still alive, aren't you?
Major General, Commanding Guards Division. His name was...
That's how I can see it.
Matchison, I think. I've got a letter.
I can't read it. Munk was your famous, wasn't it? The Coltrane Munk, they always talked about.
The Coldstream Guards, of course, had 3 battalions in the war, throughout the war, plus a battalion of pioneers.
Yeah.
And I suppose the Coldstream Guards had a bigger casualty list than any regiment of the Guards by virtue of their fact that they had 3 battalions there,
you see. Yeah, yeah.
And of course they had some wonderful leaders, including Colonel Jock Campbell, who rallied his men at the Battle of Loos with the hunting horn. Yeah.
Johnny Campbell.
Jock Campbell, VC.
Yeah. 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 It's a great pity. I gave an ex-officer, I had a postcard, which I feigned, where my father was reminded of some dinner that was coming up, and there was a picture of Campbell and Chamberlain together in top hats and whatnot, but that was Campbell the VC. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't know many of Coldstream Guardsmen, and personally, you see, the Grenadiers and the Coldstreams was never quartered together, but the simple reason was that the Coldstream Guards considered they were the senior regiment of the British Army.
Yeah.
Well, they wasn't, not as guardsmen. They may be senior to any other regiment as soldiers because they were some of Cromwell's men, you
yeah.
see.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And under General Monk, and when King Charles II came over from Flanders to regain the throne of England, accompanied by his supporters who were then the 1st or Grenadier Guards, they fought a battle and defeated the men from Coldstream.
Yeah.
And they eventually joined come over to King Charles's.
Put it back on the throne.
And they was eventually called Coldstream Guards. Well, their motto is Nulli Secundus, second to none. They can't go first, they always go last.
That's right,
see?
Yeah. Yeah, my father used to say that members of the Grenadiers used to say, nice to see some men of the 2nd Regiment.
Of course, the Grenadiers have a white plume in the right of their bear skin. The Coldstream Guards has a red plume in the left of their bear skins. And the reason it was red is because it was dipped in the Grenadiers' blood. Incidents of history which are really amusing in many respects.
Yes, yeah. Well, what I would like to do is now, I realise that you're wearing a little hearing aid, you see. Now, it does do a lot of things to make an awful noise on your aid. Can you hear pretty normally with it?
Oh, well, yes. Hearing aids, I've spent about £200 on these newfangled hearing aids, but.
All I wanted to say was, you see, I know my mother wears a hearing aid, and if you drop a knife on a plate, it hurts.
Yeah.
But I've got a part of the table, I switched it on right in the point there of where my regiment were trooping the colour, and I switched it on right at the point where the Sergeant Major shakes. But will it blast your ear, don't
well, it wasn't Sergeant Major Britton, was it?
No, I'm talking about this chap who's Royal Sussex.
Sergeant Major of the Royal Sussex.
Yeah. But the point is, I hope it won't hurt your ear.
No.
I thought it just amused you, and I switched it into the hole. There's a whole tape of the troop and the colour, but I switched it on just ready so you hear where the Sergeant Major shakes.
Yeah,
it's very
interesting.
You'd like to, may I just switch it on so you can hear?
Yeah.
Would you like to hear the Sergeant Major
say? I certainly would, yes.
If it hurts your hearing aid, you tell me.
No.
I left a little bit of music on first, it's all ready.